Ron McLean joins us. And Ron, I've finally discovered the works of Pierre Burton here over the last 6 months in my house and reading all of Pierre's books. And I feel like you could be that guy writing these books, considering you've been traveling across the country week after week after week for the last 4 years, it feels like.
What possessed you to get into reading Pierre Burton?
Good question. Thank you, Ron, for that question.
You know what it was? We were on a family vacation a couple of years ago, and we stopped in Craigellachie where the last spike was. And I thought, yeah, and I kind of started thinking about it, and I just I stumbled across in a bookstore that had all his works, and I just said, okay, I'm in. And I've just been kind of going through one book after another. It's been awesome.
I have a lot of it because we lived when I was a boy in the Yukon, and Pierre was there for quite a stretch. We were stationed at CFB Mill Cove in Whitehorse, Yukon. My father was in the Air Force, of course, and so I got to know his work a little bit, that and the work of Robert Service, who also has imbued a few of the ideas over the course of the years. But I loved it. Pierre Burton had one lovely line that he said, "We are shaped by two things, our geography and the pull of our past." And I always thought, with respect to little hockey rinks dotted along the railway across the country, that's for sure one metaphor. And the other thing, James, is we were over at CFB Esquimalt recently, and that was established by the Royal Navy from Britain, of course, long, 40 years before the last spike was nailed. So it's kind of neat to see the development of southern Vancouver Island preceded the railway, which is unusual in our gallivant across the West.
You are Canada's sports Pierre Burton.
You are. And the rail.
Well, you ultimately, if you travel as much as we do, and you've traveled a ton, I mean, Dick Irvin, I always think if I was to put a guy in that role, it would be Dick Irvin. He always said he would come to our Hockey Night in Canada seminars, and he would say the joy of the show isn't the NHL game and it isn't the broadcasters. He says the biggest kick I get is when I see four or five cities up on the screen being connected by this electronic medium. And that's what Pierre Burton was kind of ahead of our time doing.
Very much, yeah.
Speaking of connections, I find it ironic and great that within a six-day span, two good friends and two guys that might be in the all-time top 10 nice guys in the NHL get celebrated by their city. Shane Doan on Sunday. And tomorrow, of course, the focus will be on Jerome in Calgary. These guys are great friends, Ron, but they really had careers that you could tell most young Canadian kids try and mirror either Mr. Doan or Mr. Iginla, and you would have better citizens for that. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Jerome's story, I was thinking about when Crosby hollered Iggy for the golden goal at the 2010 Olympics. It's one of those moments where like 35 million Canadians are all in on the chant. You know, Iggy, please get Sid the puck. And he did it. And as Brian Burke would be quick to say, the referee also got a great assist on the goal. But it was just a moment for a guy that was born on Canada Day that I'll never forget. You know, he had two great Olympic moments. His performance in Salt Lake City came when Simon Gagné was unhealthy, had a shoulder problem, so he couldn't attend the development camp out in Alberta. So Wayne Gretzky phones Jerome Iginla. This is 2002, and he was on his way to having what should have been a Hart Trophy season. The only reason he didn't win the Hart is one American voter didn't even put him in the top 10. So he got no points from that scale of that vote, and that cost him José Theodore winning the Hart Trophy, which is ridiculous. Anyway, Gretzky phoned him, and he didn't believe it was Wayne, right? And he goes to camp, and he makes the team, and he was phenomenal on the top line at the Salt Lake Games, and then the pass to Crosby. And the fact that he's born on July 1st, Canada Day, he's one of my favorites. And then as far as Doan goes, just, you know, sweetheart of a human being, and they both are. To be, you know, ferocious on the ice and to be as gentle off, they're very similar, and I guess that's drinking from the Blazers Kool-Aid in Kamloops.
Speaking of vicious off the ice, last night, the Islanders, welcome back or a nice hostile return for John Tavares and the Leafs. You know, there's two things that I thought with this story last night, Ron. One, I thought, hey, man, could this be a rallying point for the Islanders now going forward? They've been really good this year, but, man, the fans just really kind of rallied behind their team to kind of have an enemy, if you will, and somebody to kind of say, hey, you know, you turned your back on us. But how the Leafs rolled up and died in a hostile environment, which could easily be a playoff-type scenario for them, and that to me is concerning.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is they have, like Vancouver, defensive injuries and troubles, right?
Yeah.
To lose Dermott and Gardner was a real blow. To get in like they did, you know, late, to have to play like the Canucks did, you know, they arrived in Phoenix at 3 a.m., back-to-back games, and that I think that had a lot. And they also went with Sparks, just as Vancouver didn't have Markstrom.
So
there were a lot of things I would look at in that scenario and say, you know, don't read too much into it. And then the other thing is just the whole Tavares situation was, saying to Mike English, you couldn't help but be energized by this hate, this packaging of hate, this glorification of the crucifixion. It was all, you know, the spit and celebrity as a consumer product, and I don't know what I thought of it. Part of me liked it because of the, you know, fanship, but part of me found it just a little unsettling to see that much hatred and that much joy in our voyeurism of the hatred.
Yeah, it's surprising. Ron, we'll give you some news that just broke down while we were having this conversation. Mark Crawford is now taking over the Ottawa Senators. Guy Boucher has been let go.
Wow.
Does that surprise you? I mean, considering what's done, do you really need
Mark
to point
Crawford
it at
back
the,
as the head coach now?
Yeah, do you need to point it at the coach? I mean, it's what can you do with the group you have there?
It's just a mess there, right? I honestly, between the ownership situation and the Breton Flats arena project and what was happening, it was just, you know, there was that moment on a controversial call last night with the high stick where, you know, clearly Boucher's defeated and Mark was kind of going off like he did the time with Scotty Bowman. I love Mark, you know, I think he's a really great coach, and so I always kind of felt like he should be at the helm in Ottawa in any event, so it's not a bad decision. I have to say, I think it's a guy that I think is a really solid hockey individual, so probably a smart move. Maybe it's a little late. Whatever happened there earlier in the year with the Uber ride, you know, things just have come apart at the seams at so many levels in Ottawa. It's unfortunate, but if you're going to give it to somebody to try and repair, I'd say Mark's comes from a big family, so he knows how to solve these kinds of disputes.
When was the last time, Ron McLean with us here on Sportsnet 650, when was the last time an NHL team had a week quite like this, like the Senators have had? If you think about this, right, they just lost their sixth in a row last night, falling to Edmonton. You just traded away three core pieces in Duchesne, Stone, and Dzingel this week. And you had an arena deal that you've been working on for the last half decade. Like the last 5 years, they've been working on this, and it essentially finally died this week. Like, when was the last time a franchise had a week like this, Ron? I can't think of anything like that even resembles this.
No, but I feel like when I think about it without having thought it through, both Quebec City with the dismantling of that franchise and a bid to get Eric Lindros, and they really sold off everybody, and it worked out, but they ended up leaving town. And the Winnipeg Jets also went through, you know, having to match with Keith Tkachuk's contract. And the Blackhawks had made him a front-end loaded offer, and that was the beginning of the end where they, in both cases, couldn't get an arena, and you know what's happening in Ottawa. So it's kind of an uncomfortable feeling to watch what's taking place there. And ironically, Quebec is the outlier, right? That's where a team like Ottawa or Florida can end up in a relocation. So it's just really, really upsetting to watch it happen, but it's starting to look like a chain of events.
I traveled with the Canucks when Mark was the head coach here. We were on the plane, Arorca, and it was great. And there were guys he got along with and guys he didn't. Fortunately, I got along with him and always had a lot of time. Have you seen him change? We always use the term summer crow and winter crow, it used to be in the old days. Has Mark changed? Because he'll have to be different in 2019 behind a bench, won't he?
Yeah, and I think, you know, the Bertuzzi incident might have been a real turning point. There's two. He had the embarrassment of the situation with Scotty Bowman where he came apart at the seams on the bench, and I think that was one where he realized, that fame is, it's the empty noise of madmen, and he had to be a little bit careful of how he presented. And then, obviously, the whole handling of that situation with Bertuzzi, I think, would have really illuminated Mark, his thinking on... Now, the game has changed again. You know, that game seems to be a dinosaur. But I think it was a real education, that whole process for Mark. And as I said, I think he's a really solid hockey... He's a solid human being, for sure. He's got... Roger Nielsen was a guy that he had great respect for. Wayne Gretzky had great respect for Mark Crawford. I could go on. So I think... You know, we're all, gosh knows, Perry, I've got lots of little epiphanies along the way in my own career where I thought I was doing the right thing, and clearly I wasn't, whether it was as a referee or as a broadcaster, and we all grow. And I think Mark's, this is probably a great opportunity for him.
Well, I know he's been angling to try to get back to being a head coach again in the National Hockey League, and I certainly get a sense that he has mellowed in recent years. Where, I mean, it's funny when there are some players, Mark was literally a polarizing guy for a lot of players. Some guys really enjoy playing under him, but his volatility.
I don't think you can be an effective coach though and be popular. Although I will say, I think Don Cherry. Even Don had guys that he did not like and could not exist with. Phil Esposito and Ken Hodge, obviously, he traded them. And I think Dallas Smith was much loved by his teammates, but not by Don. So that's just the dynamic, right? There's such an energy required in order to motivate or to prod. You do want to try and do it with love, but sometimes it requires that that adversarial approach. So that's pretty par for the course. There's a ton of players who hated Keenan. Lots of people are ultra loyal to Mark.
But does that work in today with today's player? Like the guy?
No, I'm not sure that it does. Yeah. Except that I still think you have to, how you achieve accountability. I was watching Daryl Sutter did a little coaches seminar for us last week in Okotoks at the Rogers Hometown Hockey Stop, and he said there's effectively three kinds of coaches. He said there's people coaches, there's bench coaches, which he considered himself, and that's the guy that really is great at changing ice time, and that's where. Travis Green, and the other's the tactical, by the way, the X's and O's guy. But he said he was the guy that recognized midstream what has to happen. And I was saying to you last week, when Travis Green put out Gaudette with 3 minutes to go to take the draw, I thought, wow, what a peculiar choice. And then Gaudette scored what got them a point out of the Arizona game 8 days ago. And then 2 nights ago, I thought Travis was really clever to make the decision to have Bo Horvat come out and take the draw for Levo and Ryan Spooner. And they got, just as pretty a goal as you'll ever see to earn at least a point. And so obviously Travis is in the Daryl Sutter, ice time mode. And I think you still need that. I you're sort of leaning towards the new era, the Generation Zers or Zetters. They want that, mental health people person. But I think the key guy, if you can find it, is the one that knows how to make adjustments and get the right people on the ice at the right time.
Yeah, and one who might be the guy who has been able to do it the best right now has been Barry Trotz. He's from Manitoba. You're heading to Winkler, Manitoba. What can you tell us and what can we look forward to this Sunday?
Well, it should be it's a great game, the Columbus Blue Jackets. So you got John Tortorella against Paul Maurice and the Winnipeg Jets. So it's a Titans meeting for sure, and two different approaches, which is neat. Winkler is a Mennonite town, so it's always been kind of a very public, very private kind of town. And I feel like the private Paul Maurice and the public John Tortorella, it's a clash of similar ideas. And then we've got a great show lined up. We've got Eddie Belfour from Carmen, as John Garrett was kidding the other night. He had that wrong for half a second. He's on the show. We've got Grant Klitsam's a really fascinating player. He had a back injury end his career, but he had solid time with both the Jackets and Jets, and he's now a wine sommelier, a cider maker. He's in business helping with a group called One Sports and Entertainment that are transitioning athletes out of the professional sports. So he's on our show. Jordan Tutu, a great feature on him, and Winkler's a neat town. We were there for Scotiabank Hockey Day in 2008, and it'll be a good backdrop.
Where is it? Where do you fly, to Winnipeg or Brandon?
You go into Winnipeg, and it's just in the south, about an hour and 40 minutes. You go almost due south from Winnipeg. There's two Mennonite communities, and we'll be in both in the next 2 weeks. One is in the Western Reserve, and that's Winkler, and the other is in the Eastern Reserve, which is Steinbach, Manitoba. So I don't know how it is that we're doing them back-to-back, but it's kind of cool.
Sportsnet 650.